You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. President Biden's new benchmark in the fight against COVID-19, getting 70% of American adults to get at least one vaccine shot by July 4th, seems to be an acknowledgement of what many scientists have been saying for months now. Eradicating the virus that causes COVID-19 may not be possible. However, if enough Americans get some protection, it will become manageable. Joining us today to discuss this and to also answer your questions are Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, as well as Dr. Stephen Nimmerson, Chief Clinical Officer for St. Alphonsus Health System. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you, Gemma.
Pleasure to be here.
And remember, if you have a question, email us, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Also, before we get started today, if you know a teenager in Idaho who is eager to get the COVID-19 vaccine, please reach out to us. We actually want to hear from kids, in particular, those kids between the ages of 12 to 15, to find out what they're thinking when it comes to the vaccine. So you can send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Now, I want to talk about what I mentioned in the very top, and this was on Tuesday. President Biden set this new goal, and it is to get one dose of the vaccine to 70% of Americans by July 4th. So that means giving out another 100 million shots in less than 60 days. Dr. Nimmerson, is that achievable? In particular, is that achievable here in Idaho?
It certainly is. The capacity for vaccination, not only in St. Alphonsus Health System, but in all our health systems and with the multitude of doctor's offices and retail locations now, it's so plentiful that we can deliver the vaccine if we have people showing up for it.
I also want to talk about the Pfizer vaccine, because it's been reported that the FDA is preparing to authorize the Pfizer COVID vaccine to 12 to 15-year-olds as early as next week. So, Dr. Pate, I want to start with you, because we talked about this last week about when we may hear about it. So this could potentially help, I would think, getting us to that 70% by the 4th of July.
Yes. So first of all, let's be clear. When the president says the 70%, he's talking about 70% of adults. So it doesn't include right. this age group. And you know, I just did a rough calculation in my head, so I may be off. I'd have to look at the exact numbers. But if it was 70% of adults, I think that would be something like 56% of our total population. So yeah, it's a stretch goal. I like stretch goals. It's good, but it's certainly not going to get us to what most people consider herd immunity, but it would be an important mm-hmm. improvement. Adding these kids is, you know, if we can start vaccinating 12 to 15-year-olds, it'd be fantastic, because unlike before we had the variants, where children weren't playing a major role in the transmission of this disease, with the variants, they play a much more important. So getting kids vaccinated is a big step towards getting us to hopefully a more normal-like school year next year.
And Dr. Nimmerson, can we talk a little bit about how this would work, maybe in particular at St. Alphonsus? Because I do believe the Biden administration said that this, for 12 to 15-year-olds, it would be, you know, you can get it at your pediatrician's office, you can get it at the family doctor's office, but also the federal pharmacy program, which I believe here locally, you know, we have pharmacies that offer the Pfizer vaccine. So how would that work at a local health organization? I mean, could I, as a mom of a 12-year-old, once they have this usage authorized, could I call St. Alphonsus and get my kiddo in? I guess is the bottom line answer, you know, question.
Absolutely, you can. In fact, the Only requirement that we have is that the parent has to provide consent for the vaccine. But we've been preparing for weeks now, expecting that this approval is going to come through at all of our locations to be able to provide vaccine to children down to the age of 12. One thing I want to tag on to a comment Dr. Pate made about the importance of getting children vaccinated is not only are they more likely to spread the virus if they're unvaccinated, but they're also more likely to get sick from these mutants that are spreading around now. And we've entered a new era of COVID. Back when we spoke some months ago, the most common strain was the common coronavirus, COVID virus. Mm-hmm. And now with these mutants, the majority of strains are mutant strains, which are causing more serious illness, higher risk of death. And this is probably one of the reasons that India is being devastated. And these mutant strains are attacking a younger population. So adolescents are more likely to get more seriously ill from the mutant strains that are spreading around right now.
Yeah, because I mean, I have a 12-year-old. He turns 13 next week, and I think the best birthday gift I could give him is a shot in the arm, if I could. I mean, I'm joking, but I'm being serious at the same time. And so, you know, for clarification purposes, I mean, once this emergency use is authorized, I mean, you sound like your health organization, Dr. Nimmerson, is ready for parents to come in with their kids.
Yes, and I think many in Idaho are ready the day that the approval comes through. We at St. Alphonsus certainly are. Our high throughput location in Meridian is prepared to accept children, be able to obtain the consents and process them very quickly, because that's also important. You know, family issues, you want to get in, you want to get out. So we're ready for that. Our doctor's offices are prepared. And then one of the things that's very important to our mission in serving the community is getting virus to patient, excuse me, getting vaccine to patients. And we are doing that through our mobile clinics, getting that vaccine out to communities that have barriers to medical access.
On Monday, the New York Times had an article that herd immunity is unlikely in the United States and that the coronavirus is here to stay. And Dr. Pate, I mentioned that in the top of the show. Sounds like even the Biden administration is acknowledging that fact. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I totally agree. I think we've missed our last year we missed the opportunity to actually get rid of this virus. And now I think we've lost our opportunity to achieve quote unquote herd immunity. Now, let me not be misunderstood. That doesn't mean there's not going to be a huge benefit to continue getting everybody that we can vaccinated, because even if we don't achieve herd immunity, and like I just said, I think that's almost inconceivable at this point. If the more people that get vaccinated, the fewer people that are going to burden our hospitals and stress the capacity there, the fewer people that are going to die. And, you know, it's even if we don't get to herd immunity, as you and I've talked many times about, Gemma, we have to slow down the transmission, or we're going to continue to develop more of these variants of concern that one day could pose a threat to all of us, even if we've been previously infected or vaccinated.
And in fact, Dr. Nimmerson, can you talk a little bit about why, you know, some of your wording is changing? I mean, you're switching from saying pandemic to endemic. What does that mean and why?
Sadly, it's a recognition of the fact that there is enough of the population in Idaho and the population across this country that will not receive the vaccine for whatever the reason is. And if a significant percentage of the population doesn't receive the vaccine, then we don't achieve herd immunity, which is the mechanism by which we wipe coronavirus off the face of the earth. And if that's not going to happen, then it's going to continue to circulate through the population. It's going to continue to mutate. And even those that are protected by a vaccine one year that protection will not be adequate a following year, and they'll need booster shots. They'll need to continue to practice the kinds of COVID reducing strategies that we talked about, face covering and separation at times. And so that's called endemic disease spread, as opposed to the pandemic. Pandemic being overwhelming, widespread epidemic, wiping people out, moving into a endemic, indolent, slow spreading, still causing disease, still causing death, illness. And it's a tragic loss in my mind, but we have to be realistic about this, and we have to develop our medical strategies to cope with it really forever.
So Dr. Nimmerson, in your opinion then, does that, you know, does that mean that, you know, the idea of like wearing a mask, the social distancing, is that going to be something that just needs to become a part of normal life? Or is it something where, you know, hey, it's wintertime, we're inside more, we're seeing an uptick in COVID, so folks, you know, maybe wear a mask inside. I mean, what will that look like? And I ask that because I think so many people want to get back to normal of the pre-pandemic, and I just don't know if that's a reality in the world that we're living in right now.
Gemma, I think you're leading to the right direction of what we can expect the future to be like. And I'll just use an analogy that I think is helpful. Patients that have cancer that are receiving aggressive anti-cancer medications, their immune systems are much more susceptible to illness, and they can have far more serious complications from all sorts of infections. And so before the pandemic, it was common to see people like that wearing a mask to protect themselves. Mm-hmm. We'll need to all consider our relative risk in the future to COVID, to the strains that may be spreading in a particular period of time, like these variants that are out there now, and make individual decisions on how much risk are we willing to take? What environment are we going to be in? If we're indoors in close proximity to a lot of people that are coughing and sneezing, yeah, we probably will want to be wearing a mask to protect ourselves. If we're outdoors in the middle of the summer, separated from other people, and we as individuals are perfectly healthy, maybe not so much.
Mm-hmm. And finally, before we head into a break, getting back to this idea of a pandemic versus an endemic, Dr. Nimmerson, does this mean in your mind that we have, and Dr. Pate, you answer this too, if you have thoughts on this, does that mean we have just completely lost the opportunity to erase COVID-19 from the face of the earth? I mean, we erase smallpox.
Yeah, Gemma, I'll answer that first, and then I'll be curious as to Dr. Pate's response. It's, as I said before, it's an acceptance of the reality and the division that exists in this country that, in my mm-hmm. lifetime, I never would have thought that medicine and disease would be something that we disagree on. But this is right. What we're facing now, for whatever the reasons that have transpired in the recent past. Have we lost the opportunity? If I'm willing to accept reality, yes. Theoretically, no. If everybody on Earth got vaccinated, we could still wipe this disease out. But I just think, sadly, that's not the direction that we're headed in.
Yeah. And Dr. Pate, your thoughts on that? Because we know that at least a quarter of Americans will likely never get the vaccine.
Yes. And so I agree with Dr. Nimmerson. I might just add a few fine points on to what he's already said. The first point is, because our legislature apparently is abundantly supplied with epidemiologists who are making pronouncements that this has never been a pandemic. Let me just clarify, it has been a pandemic. It is still a pandemic, but Dr. Nimmerson's also correct that there are places where this virus is now endemic and will be endemic, and more places where it will be endemic. So it's not one or the other. It's actually both right now. The other thing is, even though I think Dr. Nimison's right. We're not going to get rid of this virus. Things can certainly change, and they can change for the better or the worse as we do have more transmission, but at the same time, as we get more and more people vaccinated. So, you know, I think that we certainly could be facing serious mutations. But on the other hand, like Dr. Nimerson said, if we get enough people vaccinated across the United States and the world, we could see maybe this virus becomes milder, maybe it becomes seasonal. There are some upsides as well. So even if we don't get rid of this, there is still great benefit from getting as many people vaccinated as possible.
We are, of course, talking to our doctors for general education and information for our listeners. I just want folks to remember that our program is meant is not meant to take the place of actual medical care. You should still be getting many of your questions answered from your doctors. So remember, this is general information. So our panel today, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force, and Dr. Stephen Nimerson, Chief Clinical Officer for St. Alphonsus Health System. Dr. Pate, Russ sent us this email, and he wants to know about the difference between, you know, trying to avoid hospitalizations and deaths and things like that when it comes to COVID. He says early studies indicate that a lot of mild to moderate cases, though, result in long-term debilitating symptoms. My wife is still experiencing serious neurological problems a year after recovering from COVID. And though she was very sick, she was never hospitalized. So why isn't there more emphasis on avoiding even a mild case of COVID because of possible serious long-term health problems?
Amen. And certainly I've been one of those voices trying to make this point for a year now, because everybody wants to focus in on the what they perceive to be low mortality rates. But I've repeatedly tried to make the point that there are bad things that can happen to you from COVID other than dying. And in fact, you have very nicely pointed out just some. And I want to express my sympathies to you and to your wife for what she's going through. It is very tough, but we have seen many instances of people suffering long-term effects from COVID, even sometimes when they get mild infections. So you're absolutely right. I wish people would be more concerned, even if they're in the low-risk groups, for death. That doesn't mean that you are low risk for having something bad and problematic happen to you like your wife. So I hope everybody will just take this infection a little bit more seriously, take some really just some reasonable steps to try to prevent getting it, because even if it's mild, you can suffer long-term problems.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Nimerson, Ed emailed us this question. And I think as people are going back into offices, this is probably going to be coming up. So what Ed says is that he shares a small office space with one other person. Soon, Ed will be fully vaccinated. However, he goes on to say, I don't know whether my coworker has received the vaccine, and we have been directed by our employer not to inquire. So what is your advice in a scenario where only one coworker in this situation is vaccinated? And like we said, this is general information and advice, but Dr. Nimerson, it seems that, you know, this may be something facing a lot of people as people slowly head back into the office, right? It's not necessarily a question that you can ask someone.
It is. And in fact, we're trying to figure out how to deal with this in our hospitals, where we are using the highest levels of protection, and yet we've got colleagues who have to work in proximity to each other. So number one, as you said, Gemma, there's no substitute for speaking with your personal physician and having someone who's an expert in this take the time to understand how frequent your interactions are, whether you're masked and whether the other individual is masked, et cetera. I commend you for being fully vaccinated. That is the best way to protect yourself. So that's got to be paramount. The second is, when you are in proximity to somebody who is unmasked, keep your mask on, keep your distance, try and be in a well-ventilated space. And then finally, if you have to occupy a space that somebody else has been in but has vacated, my best recommendation is think about it like you would if that person had COVID the few minutes or few hours before they left that space, and conduct yourself in that way. Why? Because one, we never really know the other person that's a stranger to us. They may be a colleague, they may be a great friend, but how much information are they really sharing, and what are their contexts and so forth?
Dr. Pate, we have an email question from a listener, and you know, it's regarding travel, which of course we're getting a lot of questions about. I found this one interesting though. So she writes that her husband does jiu-jitsu, which means he's breathing in other people's faces without a mask. They have a family vacation coming up. Her mom is coming with them. Her mother is fully vaccinated. She's 77. Her mom is concerned about her husband's activities, and her mom is asking that her husband stops 3 weeks in advance of the trip so that she can be reassured that she will not catch the virus from our kids in case her husband passes it to the children. And then she goes on to say, I know my husband's going to resist this and point to statistics that he's seen that vaccinated people aren't really passing the virus to anyone, including kids. So I think the question potentially in this, Dr. Pate, is we've heard all kinds of information about if you're vaccinated, you can't pass the virus to anyone. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that and what we know.
Yeah, Jim, this is such a great question, not because there's a clear-cut answer, but because it brings up so many points. And I think Dr. Nimmerson made a great point earlier that some of these decisions just have to be made based on what amount of risk are we willing to take? And this question is great because it shows that two different people, the husband and the mother, have very different risk tolerance, and probably should, because the mother's, if I remember right, like 77 years old. And so that's the first thing. The second thing is a vaccinated person still can get infected and still can transmit the virus theoretically. We don't know how likely that is. We think it's unlikely, but it's probably not impossible either. So, and certainly I think the mother's right to point out that her daughter's husband is in a high risk situation, being around in people's faces without masks on. So let me just take a second, because I don't think the CDC has done a great job of explaining this, and people are just frustrated. They're like, well, if I get vaccinated, why am I still having to take some precautions? So let me just clearly state why we still don't just throw caution to the wind. Number one, while these vaccines are very effective, they can be less effective for certain populations. So if you happen to be on certain medications, if you happen to have certain underlying medical conditions, you may not mount as great a response. The other thing that can happen is we've seen this in assisted living centers where the residents are vaccinated, but the caretakers aren't. And under certain circumstances, especially with elderly people who their immune systems don't hold up as well as everybody else's, they can get infected and have serious consequences, even though they're vaccinated. A third point is, remember the conditions under which we did our research and when we conclude what the efficacy is. These vaccines are very, very good. However, if you took a teacher who says, I'm vaccinated now, and is in a room full of kids that are unvaccinated. And if there's significant disease transmission, and so you've got two or three of these kids are infected and they have high viral loads, and that teacher's not going to wear a mask and it's going to be with those kids for 8 hours, we don't know that the vaccine will hold up. And then fourth is the fact that these vaccines have not been tested against all the various variants. And so that's why the CDC kind of hems and haws and is frustrating people that just want them to say, you're perfectly good to go if you're vaccinated. You can do a lot if you're vaccinated, but it is not 100% protection under all circumstances. And I would just conclude by saying, you know, I hope we're able to get back to the point. We've seen some amazing selfishness, amazing lack of regard for others during this pandemic. I hope we can get back to the point of us taking other people's concerns and respecting those. So, Jim, even if you and I were to get together to do this interview in person and we're both vaccinated, if you were nervous and you wanted me to wear a mask, I hope I would just agree, hey, it's no big deal. I will wear a mask because I want you to feel safe.
100%. Also, if you know a teenager here in Idaho who is eager to get the COVID-19 vaccine, would you reach out to us, please? We want to hear from these kids, especially the kids between the ages of 12 to 15, to find out what they're thinking when it comes to this vaccine. And you can send us an email about that. IdahoMatters@boisestate.edu. I know my 12-year-old would say, my mom's making me do it. And that would be the end of the discussion. Anyways, our panel today, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force, as well as Dr. Stephen Nimmerson, Chief Clinical Officer for St. Alphonsus Health System. We just got a question in from Beth, and she says, is the Pfizer vaccine dosage the same for 12 to 15-year-olds as for adults? Not sure, Dr. Pate or Dr. Nimmerson, who would like to answer that?
I'd be happy to answer, and yes, it is the same.
Okay, and so Dr. Nimmerson, I would think that's also why then it's going to be an easy transition to start giving that vaccine, because you would probably have the vaccine on hand already.
Correct.
Okay. And then Dr. Pate, Kate just sent us this question. She says, if you have been vaccinated, can you still contribute to the spread and creation of variants, or is this not yet known? And I think that that goes back to what you were just talking about before we went into the break.
Yeah, that's right. The vaccine is going to give tremendous protection. And what that's going to do is the more people vaccinated, the more we decrease the spread. The more we decrease the spread, the more we decrease the replication of the virus. The more we decrease that, the fewer the mutations, the fewer the mutations, the fewer the variants, and then the less likely that a new variant arises that's going to be problematic. So the vaccine is very effective, but it's not 100%. And so certainly we do know it is possible to be vaccinated and still get infected. It doesn't happen often, but it can happen. And then what we don't know, because it does appear that if you're vaccinated, you will get a lower viral dose and have a lower viral load. That usually means less severe disease. It may also make it harder for you to spread it to somebody else, but we don't have great information on that just yet.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Nimmerson, Monty just wrote us in, and he says he's an octogenarian seeking some advice. I'm fully vaccinated, and I would like to return to the gym. But quite a few folks at the gym have no mask or a mask that does not cover both their mouth and their nose. I don't know, but I suspect some are not vaccinated. Exercise machines are reasonably spaced, but people walk past. So can you give me any advice?
Absolutely. Again, it gets back to some of the things Dr. Pate was saying and that I've been saying here, that it's a matter of how much risk are you willing to accept. I would hope, first of all, that you'd be able to wear a mask while you're exercising. I know that's difficult, but you can select a mask that is perhaps less constraining. So that would be one thing. Second is it's really important to make sure that the machines are disinfected, the contact surfaces have been wiped down with something that kills coronavirus, because while the commonality of spread is less from hand to mouth, it does occur. So that's critically important. And then the last thing is how far distance the other people are from you. Gym is a really bad environment because people are huffing and puffing pretty hard. And we talk about this 6 foot distance as being the one that's recommended, but that's the minimum distance. And when people are breathing really hard, those droplets that could carry coronavirus travel further. So again, it's a matter of how much risk are you willing to accept in that circumstance that you've already described. And one of the things that I like to recommend myself to others is go in and talk to the gym management. Ask them what they're doing. How frequently are they disinfecting the equipment themselves? Are they enforcing in any way, shape, or form that the people who are frequenting the gym keep apart? What's the air circulation like in the gym? That kind of thing.
Dr. Pate, Terry wrote in asking, if someone is on a short-term prescription for prednisone, should they postpone a COVID vaccination?
So I'll give you the general answer, and the answer is no. You shouldn't, under ordinary circumstances, delay getting vaccinated. However, this would be one of those good situations where the person should have a conversation with their doctor. The first thing would be, I don't know what condition the person's taking the prednisone for, and some of those conditions would make this person much higher risk for bad things to happen with COVID. So we do want to get them vaccinated, but at the same time, we can have that conversation with the person's doctor. Can the prednisone be delayed? There's also some other tricks we can do with the dosing and interval to make it less likely to impair the immune response. So the general answer is no, she should go ahead and get vaccinated, but I would have that conversation with the physician first about the specifics of the case and determine what is the optimal timing to get vaccinated and how the steroids should be handled.
Dr. Nimerson, Nancy sent us in this question. She says, if you don't have symptoms on the second shot, as happened to me, is there a chance you already have antibodies?
Actually, developing symptoms after even the first dose is not clearly correlated with whether you're generating a sufficient antibody response to provide protection. But what we do know is for the manufacturers, the Moderna and the Pfizer, that required two shots, it seems that everyone develops a certain amount of antibody production after that first one. And then after the booster, they get boosted so that essentially everyone has enough antibody protection and other types of immune protection to keep from dying from this disease. In terms of symptoms, however, there are plenty of people that will have no symptoms with either shot, and there are plenty of people that will have symptoms with one or both shots, whether they've had COVID or not before. So it really does not correlate across groups of people with whether you've had the COVID before or not. It's not a good predictor.
Well, I want to thank both of you for your time and your expertise on this. Science matters, and I so appreciate that you know you take your time every week to come in and to talk to us and to answer these questions so that we as a community can better understand the information. I think Dr. Pate, you made such a good point that sometimes certain organizations, even the CDC, sometimes can have a messaging problem. So just appreciate all that you do, all of the health systems, in getting this information out. So thank you so much, to Dr. David Pate. He is the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, as well as a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force, and Dr. Stephen Nimmerson, Chief Clinical Officer for St. Alphonsus Health System. Really, thank you both for what you do every day.
Thank you, Gemma.
Absolutely. And if you have questions for our medical experts, they will, of course, be back next week. You can email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Also, if you know a teenager here in our state and they are eager to get the COVID-19 vaccine, would you please reach out to us? We really want to hear from these kids, especially these kids between the ages of 12 and 15, to find out what they are thinking when it comes to the vaccine and why they would like to receive it. Of course, email us at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. And we will have more Idaho Matters next.